Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is actually Sunday, the 9th of April, 2017, because tomorrow is Erev Pesach, the eve of the holiday of Passover, with Seder coming up and all the craziness that goes into the preparations. I'm recording my show a day earlier today. Hopefully, it'll still be relevant when you're listening to the broadcast. I think it will be, based on all the events going on in the crazy world around us. Hope you're doing well. Get in touch with me anytime. Josh@thelandofisrael.com is my email. On Facebook, it's Joshua Haston, and on Twitter, at Josh Haston. So we're gearing up here for the Passover holiday, of course, and if you missed any part of last week's show, go back and listen to our scholar-in-residence, Rabbi Guy Avihud, talking about some of the important concepts of the holiday of Passover. But so much going on in the world, so much going on in the news, we are going to get to that. We're not going to be talking to anybody today. Everyone's busy cleaning their kitchens and getting ready, so we're not going to interview anybody today, but there is a lot to talk about. Unfortunately, something very, very tragic and sad we experienced here. I actually heard the sirens from where I sit on a regular basis in the Binyamin region north of Jerusalem. 20-year-old Golani soldier Elchai Taharlev murdered by a terrorist, by a jihadist, in a ramming attack the other day here in Israel as he was guarding a bus stop. He was actually guarding the stop there, sacrificing his life to save others outside of the community of Ofra. So a terrible tragedy in Israel the other day. Again, this is not the first car ramming attack. We see this way, way too often here in Israel. And we're also seeing it in other parts of the world. We'll get to that in a minute. The IDF is set to demolish the home of the terrorist from the village of Silwad near Ramallah. Malik Hamed, 22, perpetrated the attack, specifically looking to target IDF soldiers and Israeli civilians. And in terms of the demolition of the home, the longer the security forces or the IDF waits to demolish the home, the less of a deterrent it is. So they need to get these things done as soon as possible, demolish these homes of the terrorists, send a message. I would add on top of that, I believe that the families, as a deterrent, I believe the families of these terrorists should be deported from this country. There needs to be a bigger deterrent. We're seeing these types of attacks all over, time and time again here in Israel, some ending in tragedy, some ending in miracles, but enough is enough. I believe this is the fifth soldier, if I'm not mistaken, who was murdered in this type of attack since January 1, but we need to not just act defensively and barricade our bus stops and the hitchhiking posts, but we need to be more proactive. We need to set a deterrent so that these attacks do not happen here in Israel. They're happening elsewhere as well. On Friday, this is a report from Reuters. 39-year-old Uzbek man is being held in custody after hijacking a delivery truck and plowing into a crowd in Stockholm, killing 4 people and wounding 15 others, what Reuters calls an apparent terrorist attack. That's what police said on Saturday. We've seen this before in Europe. We saw it in Nice, Berlin, London, and of course Reuters points this out. Here's a quote from an article. Vehicles have been used as weapons in Nice, Berlin in the past year in attacks claimed by Islamic State. Of course, no mention of Israel in the article. It's like they don't happen here in Israel. Reuters doesn't report it. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Israel's ignored, as if it was justified, the attack this week that killed an Israeli. But when it happens in Europe, then it's perhaps a terror attack. First of all, they say perhaps, because they're not even willing to admit it. And that's one of their big issues in Europe with taking in all these refugees and a lot of jihadists sneaking in with them. Sweden, of course, especially at the top of that list in terms of, have you seen these videos of these attacks in Sweden? In addition to this car or truck ramming this week, you see the attacks being carried out by Muslims in Sweden against the local population. Yet somehow their sympathies for Israel are so slim, you would think it to be the exact opposite, since we're all in the same boat here, but they don't get it in Sweden. And the attacks will most likely continue in different cities throughout Europe because of their policies and because of their lax attitude when it comes to dealing with this jihad. I'm not wishing it upon them in Europe. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I just don't think that they are prepared. And here at home, we need to be better prepared as well. We're unfortunately way, way too used to this type of stuff. Switching gears, that wasn't even the attack there in Stockholm. The top story, the top story worldwide, of course, the United States under President Donald Trump taking action against the Syrian regime, the Assad regime there, firing 60 Tomahawk cruise missiles at an airport in Syria. It was actually 59 struck. One fell into the sea. So 59 cruise missiles from U.S. Navy destroyers targeting the airfield where the planes were launched and carried out that horrible chemical attack against civilians there in Syria. Assad, of course, targeting his own people, Bashar Assad. Not the first time, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well, but reported by today's Jerusalem Post, a broad coalition of world leaders who for months criticized President Trump as an erratic force sang his praises over the weekend, grateful his administration chose to act where his predecessor would not in striking Syrian President Bashar Assad for his use of chemical weapons against innocents. And if you look on the internet, you can find many clips. They're gathering all of the videos of Secretary of State Kerry talking about how the U.S. policies back then were so effective in ridding Syria of its chemical weapons. This is 2013, 2014. You have so many different administration officials, including the president himself, congressional leaders, senators, talking about what a wonderful job the U.S. did back in 2013, 2014, taking action, or not taking action, rather, in Syria, not having to take action in their view, even though they threatened to do so. But here you have a chemical attack. The U.S. had their chance back then, but it looks like a new sheriff is in town with President Donald Trump taking action there. A lot of different questions, a lot of different potential scenarios from this point on. I mean, was this response by the Trump administration, was this a warning to Syria, a warning to Iran? Because, of course, Iran ultimately is calling the shots, pulling the strings behind what's going on in Syria, what's going on with Hezbollah, what's going on in that part of the region. They are the power source there. Does this mark, this attack, response by the president of the United States, an overall change in policy towards Syria, or is this just a warning to the Iranians, to the Syrians? Time will tell. We'll have to see where this will lead. You had UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, of course, a big supporter of Israel, we've seen, saying in an interview, which I think is going to actually air Sunday night in the United States on CBS, that she now sees regime change in Syria as a top U.S. priority. Now, this is different. This is different than what President Trump was saying during his campaign, what he was saying even just several weeks ago. Now it's a top priority. And, you know, we thought it was jobs and Obamacare and all these other local domestic issues. And it looks like now the U.S. is realizing what the reality is with the dictator in Syria and what a threat he poses and ultimately Iran poses to world security. So what will the U.S. do? Haley now saying again that this is a top priority. So perhaps the U.S. is not finished, and that is just the start, the launch of those Tomahawk missiles as a result of the chemical attack. Russia, another huge issue, is how will Russia respond to what the U.S. did? reports indicate a official within the Russian administration saying that what the U.S. did caused a near war. It says here reports of somebody being quoted in the U.S. In the Russian administration saying that this is within an inch of war what the U.S. did in responding, and that's huge. I mean, that's a huge, huge change from just several days ago. Of course, issues with Russia backing the Syrian regime, but how close are the United States and the Russians truly? How close are they towards a major, major conflict? One official saying it was a near war, the fact that the U.S. responded. We'll obviously have to see how all of this goes. Israel, how will this affect Israel? Remember, back in 1991, when the U.S. went into Kuwait to liberate Kuwait from Iraq, how did the Iraqis respond? They launched 39 Scud missiles at Israel. Will Syria try something similar? And these are all scenarios that I know our military leadership and our leadership in the government are taking into consideration. We'll have to see how it plays out. This is a rare case, by the way, of the Israeli Knesset from the right to the left and everybody in between applauding the U.S. Our good friend Gil Hoffman from the Jerusalem Post reports that U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to strike a Syrian air base received praise from across the Israeli political spectrum over the weekend, with Meretz and the Likud reactions indistinguishable in their support. Here's Zahava Galon from the Meretz party saying, quote, "When crimes against humanity take place, the world cannot stand aside." So across the board, praise. I don't know if this is a first time ever. Across the board praise for the U.S. administration for taking action against Syria. Now, in terms of what actually was taken out on the ground, a report indicating that the strike took out various assets at one airbase, 20 Syrian jets, but apparently the airstrip, initially they said the airstrip was destroyed. Apparently that's not the case. Apparently they can still use that airstrip from where the planes left to launch that chemical attack. So originally, it looked like it was more of a serious strike in terms of the damage, but now it looks like perhaps it was less serious. Again, going back to the theory of sending a message. Maybe. We'll see what the Trump administration does from this point on. Quick break. We'll be right back. My name is Josh Haston, Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Get in touch with me during the week, josh@thelandofisrael.com. On Facebook, Joshua Haston is my name, and on Twitter, @JoshHaston. Quick break, more analysis on the situation with Syria when we come back. And we are back. Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Sunday, April the 9th, 2017. When you hear this broadcast, hopefully it'll be Monday, April the 10th, just before Passover. Maybe you're listening to the broadcast as you're making your last-minute preparations, cleaning the kitchen, koshering the kitchen, getting the matzah ready, getting everybody all set for the Seder tonight all over the world. It's the most, from what I understand, it's the most popular ritual in all of Judaism, from all streams of Judaism, Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, wherever you are, whatever type of Judaism you practice. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that 90%, I think it is, of Jews have some form of Passover Seder. Correct me if I'm wrong out there in the world of radio. If I'm wrong about that stat, I'm pretty sure that's what I read, that it's around 90% have some sort of Passover Seder, whatever it is, whether it's just eating matzah, whether it's going through the entire Haggadah, whatever it is. If I'm right or if I'm wrong, let me know. josh@thelandofisrael.com. Send me an email. We were talking about the U.S. retaliation, the response, the message sent to the dictator in Syria, Bashar Assad, for the use of chemical weapons against civilians. The Israeli security cabinet to meet today, which is Sunday, to talk about the situation. But a report from our friend Herb Kanin at the Jerusalem Post in terms of Israel and Israel's role or Israel's attitude or response or what Israel will do, because this could affect us down the road here. He says the U.S. informed Israel of its attack on Syria shortly before it took place, and Prime Minister Netanyahu was one of the first leaders to applaud the U.S. move early Friday morning. Netanyahu again convening his 10-member security cabinet today to discuss the situation in Syria. His office, the Prime Minister's office, issued a statement saying that, quote, in both word and action, President Trump sent a strong and clear message today that the use and spread of chemical weapons will not be tolerated. Again, wall-to-wall support in Israel, left, right, center, all parties, all members of Knesset. I didn't hear what the Arab members said, but aside from them, in support, maybe they were in support also, but in support of the U.S. and President Trump's move. Vladimir Putin had actually reprimanded Israel in a phone call with the prime minister, saying it was too early to respond, to say who was responsible for the attack. Again, so this is Vladimir Putin calling Netanyahu when Netanyahu issued a statement praising Donald Trump, the president, for taking action. You had the Kremlin responding, saying that it's unacceptable to make accusations before there's an investigation. And the Russians, of course, looks like at this point, the Russians and the Americans on a collision course over what's going on in Syria. But it's really deeper than that. It's about control here in the Middle East. It's about the U.S., who has been sitting out for the last 8 years under the Obama administration, really just letting the Middle East, well, actually their policies, they did take some positions in the Middle East, like, you know, supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and whatnot. But you have 500,000 Syrians dead. It looks like the Trump administration's ready to take a different approach, perhaps to end the situation, end the war in Syria, and perhaps form an alliance with some of the other parties in the region. I'm talking about, of course, the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia and others in an alliance against Iran. Because let's remember, Iran is the ultimate enemy, the ultimate sponsor of world terror through their various agents, through Hezbollah, through Hamas, and others. So we'll have to see ultimately where this attack leaves things so complicated in Syria. So many different warring factions, so many different terror organizations, and then those who simply just want to be free. So you have all that going on in Syria at the same time. Just a few more reactions I want to share. Deputy Foreign Minister Tzipi Hotovelli saying, quote, the American attack in Syria sends an important message of leadership to the Middle East and the entire world. America has returned to the lead. That's what I was just saying a few minutes ago. Former National Security Council head Yaakov Amidror said that Iran, more than any other country in the world, is carefully paying attention to the U.S. response, taking into account that if they don't behave, the military option is on the table, unlike the previous administration. There you go. Amidror said that Iran supported Assad after his previous use of chemical weapons and that there is no question that even if they did not have prior knowledge of the attack, they are morally responsible. Also, other questions, whether Israel would get involved militarily. It does not look like that would be a wise move to get Israel. You know, Israel does this when necessary, when there's a direct threat. We know Israel has targeted Syria, taking out weapons, convoys, supplies of weapons headed for Hezbollah that we've seen time and time again to keep Hezbollah from using Syria as a launching pad for attacks. Israel has acted, and Amidror comments on that as well, but it does not look like, and I believe it should not be, a case where Israel gets embedded in that situation. We are still taking in, even though Syria is a declared enemy, does not recognize our right to exist, we are still taking in Syrians for medical treatment in hospitals in Israel. Unprecedented. I think there was an article about it, actually, believe it or not, in the New York Times, but it's gone unnoticed for a long time that Israel's actually taking in Syrians in order to help them after they are wounded in that conflict. Israel just doesn't get enough credit, no matter what it does. It gets it in some camps, but overall, we're not seeing the credit that Israel deserves for all of the things that she does just to make the world a better place. Those are the main stories here this week. Again, a little bit of a shorter show, no guests, all ranting, and I hope you got a chance to listen and are listening as you're getting ready for the Passover holiday. I surely am. It is in the air here in Israel. If you're listening outside the country, I can vouch for this, living many, many years in the U.S. It's not the same feeling here in Israel, with the vast, vast majority of people running to the supermarkets, cleaning their homes. Spring is in the air. It's just a sense of unity around the holiday that you don't feel, and you just can't feel anywhere else but here in the Jewish state. If you haven't experienced the Passover here, I suggest you give it a chance. Try it out. Make your tickets now if you're not on your way over for next year, for next Passover. It is a unique experience. Seder night in Israel, wherever you are in the country, truly is an amazing, amazing time. So that does it for today. Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Hope you'll be in touch. Josh at thelandofisrael.com is my email. Joshua Haston on Facebook, at Josh Haston on Twitter. I want to thank Benjamin Bresky for putting the show together. Without him, there's just no sound. I want to wish all the other hosts here on the Land of Israel Network a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a joyous Chag, a happy Passover. And to you, the listeners, I want to wish you a wonderful, wonderful Passover if you're celebrating wherever you are in the world. Have a meaningful experience. Have a wonderful and kosher holiday. And most importantly, when we talk again, please God, not next week, because it's going to be still Passover, but in 2 weeks. We speak again in 2 weeks. Let's hope for some good news. And everybody out there, be safe. Shalom, shalom from Israel. Happy Passover.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself, and I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
Hey folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program, tour, experience that you could possibly have is to go with Hayovel. Now, it's weird. I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to hayovel.com.